not recorded a podcast in absolutely ages, so we decided to do one that's going to be 2 hours long.
Mother, there's too many of you crying.
Let's go. So I am ready to go with a podcast. Actually, there's another podcast that St. Anthony's recorded, so that will be out before this one. So for the listeners, this will be the second podcast in a week. So
at least this one's not getting recorded in the wind tunnel, what has it usually been?
Anyway, so for the listeners, this will be the second podcast in a week. I am joined by the Celtic team of Lawrence Donegan and Remy McSwain. How you doing, guys?
Sorry, who? Lawrence who? Never heard of him. I'm all right. Okay.
Sorry, is this Lloyd Cole that's on the call?
Well, you'll be getting charged to get him on.
Yeah, I'm cheaper than him. That's for sure.
Anyway, yes, how you doing, guys?
I'm doing great. Harry, I almost forgot to call you Harry there. Oh,
who cares? Honestly, how are things in California?
Not bad. I think not suffering too much from the atmospheric river. Lot of rain, lot of sun, a lot of disappointment. I was driving down the highway. The number five highway to Los Angeles from San Francisco on Saturday with the phone perched on the dashboard watching the game. So wasn't very happy once we got to Bakersfield for two reasons. One, Bakersfield is, I think it's a cow capital of America or California, and the stench is unbelievable. And then, of course, Kamarnock scored in the last minute. My poor wife was sleeping in the passenger seat, and I was woke her up swearing and shouting.
Shows you how much you're a conversationalist. You are no longer on me.
Yes. With interesting facts about Bakersfield being the cow capital of America and stuff like that.
Actually, there's 75,000 cows in that barn over there.
Honestly, the smell. Actually, Bakersfield's an interesting place. It's a lot of cows, and the country and western capital of the Pacific Coast. Very big country and western scene there, so there you go.
In Harry, I've stopped.
Honestly, so
for the three listeners that are left, how's the west end of Glasgow, really?
I think we're about to find, Harry, when you check the geography of people listening to the but six people from Bakersfield will be on it. So, actually, the West End is it's been shut down again. We've got another hazmat incident somewhere.
Have you?
It's I was trying to check it while Lawrence was talking, but I haven't tracked it down to where it is. But it's shut down again tonight, so which is not good. Mm. Hold on, I'm just trying to find out where it is.
Somebody was spotted without a cravat.
Well, it was explosive last week. Hold on. Wow.
It's all gone downhill since I left, Harry.
There we go.
Anyway, very simple question I've got for both of you. Since the last time, I think the last time I did a podcast, Paddy Power paying out on Celtic being champions. So the obvious question is, what's going on? To quote Marvin Gaye, what's going on? Remy, what's going on at Celtic?
Oh, I was going to say, I thought the last time me and Lawrence did a podcast, Ronnie Dyler was in charge. what's going wrong? There's no short answer to that, is there? Everything is going wrong. We look a very dysfunctional club just now. Boardroom, not spending money, not buying players, not addressing positions that have been needing addressed for at least 2 years. A manager that plays football that's as boring as Lawrence's journey to Bakersfield. A defence that's possibly up there with some of the worst players we've ever seen in our back four. No speed or pace or invention in the team. the supporters, a lot of support, not liking the manager. We've now finally fallen behind an abysmal Hun team, and it actually looks right now that we probably won't win the league, and that is fairly disastrous.
So, Lawrence, apart from all of that, what's going on?
Well, I mean, I largely agree with what Remy's saying. It's pretty bad. I mean, the football's bad, really bad. The mood coming out, just the general mood, you know, the kind of atmospherics are terrible. But we're only 2 points behind. I mean, Rangers, that's a terrible, terrible Rangers team. We're only 2 points behind. So, I mean, I'm not yet ready to call time on the season or call time on the league. I mean, you'd be crazy. Absolutely. I mean, it could all change in one weekend. And then, you know, but Remy's dead right. He's got his finger on the kind of underlying issues. The brand of football is terrible. What worried me a couple of weeks ago, I'm kind of losing track of the games now, is, you know, for a long time, you know, you look at our starting 11 and it's okay. You would look at us and you look at them and you think, well, neither are very good. Actually, the winners this year will be the worst winners of the league since probably Ronnie Dial's team. But you would look, okay, worst case scenario, we don't have all our players back, but there's a kind of general parity. But then you look at our bench some of these past few weeks and our bench is absolutely dire. So when things are going wrong, there's nobody coming on to change anything. But yeah, so to kind of sum up, I generally agree with Remy, but you know, let's everybody calm down. Everybody's running around with their hair on fire. I mean, there's still, 13, 14 games to go. We're only 2 points behind it. We've beaten them twice this year. We've got two games against them, and they are absolutely pish. So
we've all game against Kilmarnock. We can't beat them.
Well, again, in a bad league, Remy, you know, they're actually, you know, if you put it in the context of the league, they're actually not a bad, you know, not a bad side. Very well coached. I mean, he's terrible. He's awful. I mean, you look at the game on Saturday, I guess we'll come on to it, but, you know, it was entirely predictable. But again, he coaches in a particular way, extremely predictable, but he's got a set of players here that actually follow instructions pretty well, are very, very athletic and aren't scared to kick their opponents and hope they'll get away with it.
Devil's advocate question. We're supposed to have an elite coach. Why is he getting out coached by Derek McInnes 3 times this season?
Well, I'm not here to defend Brendan Rodgers. I mean, the brand of football we're serving up is fairly indefensible.
What's going to change in the next 11 games that will win us the league?
Well, I'll tell you what's not going to change, Rem, is that we're not going to change the manager. We're not going to change the players. So
we're not going to change football. Cameron Carter-Vickers, if he can last more than 60 minutes, will settle the defence. Riho Hitati won't be back for at least another 3 or 4 weeks. The whole midfield, totally off form. We've got a non-scoring striker. We're playing, our best striker is a number 10, which he's not. Our wingers are all absolutely garbage. It is a real, real worry.
Again, I don't deny any of that, Rem. But as I say, you know, you've not got much here to put on fire anyway, but, you know, let's not all talk about pot in the kettle, eh? But, you know, there's a fair amount of time to go. Let's not give up yet. As I say,
I'm not giving up. Good.
Well, you can't.
The signs
can't
are all there.
Like
the signs are all there.
Of course. I mean, I haven't seen that. The thing I look at, you know, I hate, you know, people can look ahead and kind of predict and all that. The one I haven't seen it this week, that the boy that does the Rangers Report Twitter account does a really good predictive league table every week. I haven't seen the latest one, but I'm sure Rangers are now ahead. I think it's based on XG differentials and stuff like that. So I'm sure Rangers are ahead right now, but it won't be by much. It's kind of nip and tuck. In terms of the league, you would have to say it's probably 55-44 in their favour right now. Come on. And so, again, hardly a lost cause. We get Cameron Carter-Vickers back. We get Hitati back. Maybe Brendan finds some stumble. You know what it is. Sometimes in football, you kind of stumble across something. I know it sounds like wishful thinking, but things can change. I hope, you know, hopefully he'll find some sort of structure or some kind of formation. And hopefully he won't be as rigid. He has switched in the recent weeks to a 4-4-2 or a 4-4-1-1, whatever you want to call it. There's a slight less predictability about the way we play. But yeah, not good, but not, you know, not terminal, not yet anyway.
It just strikes me that, and it actually started right at the beginning of the season when the team got booed for drawing a game where we actually extended our points that we get in the league. There's a general negativity about the club, and players can sense that. You know, they feel the negative, and so what that then does makes them more conservative in their decision making. So it doesn't matter, and I'm not defending Brendan here, and I'm just talking about the practicalities of it. So I can well imagine it doesn't matter what you coach Monday to Friday, they then get on the pitch, sense that negativity because we've been booed winning a game 1-0. I mean, honestly, I'm quite sure those were the 15,000 Old Firm fans who didn't turn up during the Ronnie Dyla days. But to boo it, I've never booed a Celtic team ever. I'm in that old-fashioned thing of it achieves fuck all. What is the point? But to actually...
I'm either. I don't know. Right now, though, we are better away from home.
Yes, because of that negativity. So my issue is, I think there's multiple reasons. So why the negativity? Negativity because we all wanted certain positions strengthened and we wanted to enhance the team after the transfer window. And actually, there was no enhancement to the team after the transfer window. And then we announced £70 million in the bank. So it's not like we're skint. So there's a pissed offness, obviously, that the team's no better, probably worse, with £70 million in the bank. Then there is Brendan plays a whatever, you know, whether you think he's just not very good or whatever, Brendan plays a different way to Ange, as any manager would. And there is a first couple of games of the season where there's going to be a disjointedness. Whoever took over the team, because they're going to play slightly different, there's going to be a slight, it's not quite right. And we draw at home, and then you've got a chunk of the support who've never forgiven Brendan for leaving the way he did. So you get a chunk of the support never forgiven him. You've got a pissed off chunk of the support because we get £70 million in the bank, just fucking spend some money attitude. And then the team is disjointed and they boo the team with a group of young players in it because of injuries at the beginning of the season. And that, and I'm not saying that the fans are responsible, I'm just saying all of that together has just, it's, from day one, it's been a non-stop negativity. And my gut feel is that part of the compounding problem is the players absolutely sense it. So the way that works for us is somebody makes a run and somebody plays the pass, and that's the only way you get in behind the low block. And all that happens is people become a bit more conservative about their decision making. They don't play the run. The player then has to bend the pass and come back in, doesn't make it, so there's no longer anything on for them, and they play the simple pass to the side.
Yep, the horseshoe of death.
Yeah, and that's what happens, because everybody become, and then the fans get on their back and everybody becomes risk averse.
Well, a couple of things there, Brian. It's quite interesting. You're talking about the negativity of fans and all that. So the one thing that could dispel that is you should play better football, a more exciting brand of football, one, you know, more often and more convincingly, more entertainingly. So you have that aspect of it. So that's down to the manager, really. But layered on top of that, I think, and you kind of noticed it, and it's really a kind of insider baseball thing, but you know, the communications within Celtic are a real, I mean, it's a kind of field that I know a little bit about. I think it's been disastrous. So we got 70 million in the bank, we're not signing any players. No wonder people are enraged by that. Quite right. If that's all the information you've got, we've got 70 million in the bank and we haven't signed any players, then you'd be mad about that. I'm mad about it. I mean, I'm guessing the three of us are mad about it. The problem is, you look at the transfer there. For months and months and months, Brendan was talking about, we'll get in some quality. Okay, summer window wasn't right. We'll get in some quality players, maybe three or four in January. So January comes, and lo and behold, we get one, you know, you can, I mean, Kuhn will leave, you know, whether or not he's you leave that to one side. We get one quotes and quotes quality player in. People are mad. So the problem isn't the fact. Well, the problem is the fact we didn't sign up. But the problem is the messaging was all wrong. For months and months and months, we were, you know, led to believe there was going to be three or four players coming down the pipe. When you actually think about it, that's like an impossible guarantee to make. You know, a January window. How are you going to find three or four first team players in the price range that price range that we're operating in? So instead of all this, you know, through October, November, December, you know, all this stuff about quality, three, four, whatever quality players are going to buy players, you know, somebody should have pulled Brendan aside. And there should have been some kind of coordination within the club about setting expectations. It's kind of normal, sensible communication strategy. Instead, you know, one department isn't talking to another department, isn't talking to another department. So the football department and the management department and the comms department should all be getting together in, you know, October, November. Okay, this is the strategy. We keep expectations extremely low, and then we under promise. Classic, and you know this, Brian. You under promise and over deliver. Instead, we over promised and under delivered. So no fucking wonder people are going mad. I mean, quite right. But again, the problem isn't just the football. It's the problem is the other parts of the club as well. And the communications department is absolutely responsible for that. By the way, I read the papers close. I mean, I read all the shit that's out there. But I know more about the football workings of Rangers. Oh, before I forget, 70 million in the bank. You know, I would like to know, okay, great, we've got 70 million in the bank. So why have we got 70 million in the bank? I mean, there must be a reason we've got such a vast amount of money. Somebody just tell me.
They got the Jota money the day before the financial year end.
Right, but that was only 25, and then you've got to pay Benfica. Yeah,
he didn't have 70 million in the bank at the end of July. It's just that's a date for a balance sheet. I'm not going to bore folk.
Right, okay.
All the season ticket money in, and they get the transfer money in for Jota. So they've got a lot of money. Well, they're always got a lot of money at the end of June.
Right, so there's a story there.
With you, the poor spending, Brian made a very, the words risk averse. We've got a risk averse board, we've got a risk averse manager, and we have risk averse players. And it's horrible right now. There's complete malaise around the whole club.
Yeah, but part of the issue, obviously the main issue is the football, but part of the issue is the kind of the story, the communications. You know, I don't know, you know, if there's a story of why we're sort of, you know, I've got this vast store of this treasure in the bank, or what, you know, for whatever reason, just tell me. Then I'll maybe understand why we aren't spending it on players. But nobody knows. I happen to know more about what's going on in the football side of Rangers just by reading, you know, the kind of club structures and what they're trying to do. And I mean, we all kind of laugh at people, you know, the Daily Rangers, and, you know, it's, they're all just kind of client journalists. But you know what? I mean, credit to them for getting out there and getting a story out there and keeping their fans in the loop and behind it. Of course, results help. You know, they're playing shite, but they're getting results pretty much like us, maybe 5% better, but pretty similar story. The difference is that Rangers fans feel like they know what's going on. So they feel invested. What do we feel? We feel like fucking, you know, when in a dark barn being fed shit. I don't know why I've got all that money. What's that?
You back
in Bakersfield. Bakersfield CSC. By the way, just a quick story, right? How will I call him? A senior figure in the Scottish football jersey. A guy, a really smart guy, a guy I respect. No, he's not fucking Keith Jackson, believe you me. So he runs a football operation in, you know, covering Scottish football. I said, he can't get a call from Celtic. They don't even acknowledge they exist. You know, meanwhile, on the other side of the city, a revolving door, they get invited in every day. They get all the information they want. They get to speak to whoever they want. Of course, they're doing a job for Rangers. But you know what? There's a story being told. There's information being given out. You know, so people, supporters feel involved. They feel invested. On the other end, this media operation can't even get a call returned. It was antediluvian. Jeez, you look at the coverage of Celtic, and there's the same three or four journalists, you know, three or four client journalists as there was 10, 15 years ago. you know, I don't not mention any names, but you know, these columns get published and you just know that they've gone and spoken to a particular person. You can identify it. It's not like anybody doesn't know, but it's the same people with the same tropes, the same old boring shite from 10 years ago. And we haven't, our communications operation hasn't moved on. And that's the problem with the negativity now, because the fans feel like they don't know what's going on and they feel disconnected with the club. So that's why they're booing 1-0 wins, apart from the fact that football's shite.
Yeah, but part of that, you were saying about the fans and the communication. So part of that communication then is, with the nature of social media and why you need to feed the beast of it, is because if you don't have a narrative every day, the void gets filled with shite. So, for example, many people listening to this will have got the WhatsApp message a couple of weeks ago about how Brendan had stormed out of Celtic Park, got on a plane, flown to Switzerland, and was in a lodge. Now, I spoke to someone...
An orange lodge.
in the Alps. I spoke to someone and they said, have you seen this? Right? And there was lots of things that were happening in this WhatsApp message that went around. And the first thing the person said was, well, that's a pile of shite, because for a start... It's a fucking birthday party happening in Glasgow that he's at, and this bullshit WhatsApp message is being sent to everybody as being gospel. And there's two things. There's one of the things that always, when you get these messages, it goes to the mind is, because some of it, you get it, I didn't even need to check that Brendan was at home. It was, some of it is just, again, you're fortunate to know people who know people. Some of it's just not, you just know wouldn't be true. You know, it's like somebody was pissed on a telephone call. I think it may have even been Brendan, who doesn't drink.
Yeah.
You know, like, and you think, somebody has sat at home and made this shit up and pretended it's real and then circulated it, and everybody else reads it and takes it as gospel. But that can only happen when there is a complete void of information. And so that fills out that void of information. So your point about the narrative being about stuff. So Celtic's sort of attitude to that, when we don't have a bumper transfer window in the summer of signing star players, Celtic's attitude is almost, I'll not name names because I don't like personalising stuff, there are people at Celtic whose attitude is, when the press come in at the end of the transfer window, is almost to laugh at the press and saying, see, you came up with all this bullshit about us going to sign loads and loads of high-profile, expensive players, and we didn't do that. As if it's something to be proud of, that they allowed that narrative to gather speed so that the fans
bang
are
on.
Waiting for the expectation. And then when it's wrong, it's like laughing at the press for getting it so wrong, completely misunderstanding that what the press have done is created a mood amongst the fans that this amount of money is going to get spent, so that actually all that happens, instead of the fans being instead of the fans joining in and laughing at the press too, the fans are now in a bad mood because what happened to the £10 million signings? Well, nobody said it was Celtic to be £10 million signings, but it was such a narrative that was allowed to continue that the perception was that there would be.
Well, we our comms department is purely reactive. We don't, there's no proactivity. It's lazy, complacent, combative nonsense. All we ever do is react. We're not in any way proactive. When have you ever seen, I don't even know, I'm a football stats nerd, not to the same degree as, you know, our pal, what's his face, brilliant Celtic by numbers boy.
I know, Celtic by numbers.
And Duco, and he's not my pal. He's a fucking fanny, that guy. The no, he's not really. He's just too miserable for me because I'm a happy-go-lucky kind of guy. But just, you know, I don't even know who the Celtic stats guy is. I don't know who the Celtic chief scout is. I don't know who the Rangers director of football is, but I know he's been in the papers a lot, talking about this, that, and the next thing. We don't know.
Yes,
well, exactly. There's stories to be told, but there's no appetite or motivation. Apparently, well, there should be plenty of motivation, but there appears to be none to go and tell these stories. So, as I say, you know, it might not in the good times. This stuff probably doesn't really matter, and everybody gets lulled into a false sense of security. But see, when times get tough, this is what leads to booing. You know, 1-0. And this is what leads to, you know, fans show up for the game and they're already kind of mad about the transfer window, rightly so. And as soon as something goes wrong, poof, that then that's, you know, light the blue touch paper and stand back. Entirely understandable and entirely predictable. Drives me fucking crazy.
So, Remy, you're one of these people with a rumour that fills the void.
not my rumour, mate.
No, I'm not saying it was your rumour. I'm just saying that it came from, that you were the first person I heard it from.
Well, that's maybe true. But, you know, this rumour has been... Well, the rumour is, for the people who are thinking, what the hell are these idiots talking about, is that Matt Lawwell will not be at the club soon. Whether it's resigned or pushed or whatever. And a few people have heard this rumour, and a few people have checked this rumour out, but it seems to be getting denied. But, you know, I'm still in the no smoke without fire. I'm certain Mark Lowell will not be there next season.
Well, I mean, for me, the negativity part, so the sort of four strands to the negativity, there's the footballing side that's associated with the style of play and or Brendan. There is the, well, maybe even three strands. There is the money side and the lack of spending, which is connected to Mark Lawwell. And then there is the Lawwell side, which is the fact that Peter Lawwell's back at the club. He's associated with a certain style of frugality around his tenure. I think there's a lot of false narratives have come around in terms of, we didn't spend money, Peter disappears, we spend money on a different on first team players, Peter comes back and we stop spending money. I think that's more coincidental than him driving it.
And probably not true, Brian, when you look at the overall in and outs, the balance sheet, you know, our net spend probably hasn't changed. I mean, I don't have the numbers.
But the point is, for me, as a consequence of that, if you want to get rid of the negativity, yes, winning games is the simplest way to get rid of the negativity. But for me, that underlying negativity and agitation amongst the fans is there. And winning games just papers over it until we lose a game. And then it will return with vitriol.
Yeah.
So for me, the only way to resolve it is at least two of those three can't be at the club.
I agree.
And
time to, I'm lucky. I, as you know, I'm a very, very infrequent podcaster now. So I don't, and I think by the minute's kind of, it'll come back maybe as the by the minute at some point, but we don't have press passes, so I can say what I want, and the two Lawwells have to go.
Is that your two of the three?
Yes.
I was wondering who the two of the three was. Right, well, firstly, can I have a, well, not to play devil's advocate. Firstly, Peter Lawwell's a good Celtic man. Absolutely. Off to a good start, both of them then. And Peter Lawwell did a lot of good for the club, definitely. There's no question. You can't sit here and just slaughter him. You just can't.
Shouldn't be the chairman of Celtic. Well, and he shouldn't be. His own son shouldn't be working for him.
Well, I was going to come on, you know, I think it's a bit more nuanced than that, but then I'm a bit more of a kind of nuanced figure than you, Remy.
Because fucking nuance, read that in the Guardian once and nicked it.
The thing, so the Mark Lawwell, who knows Mark Lawwell if he's coming or going? Who even knows if Mark Lawwell's good at his job? I've heard both sides, you know, of, oh, he was responsible for this signing and he always did a brilliant job at Man City. You know, he got his Ange, and I mean, you know, you can argue the toss, but again, he was at Man City. We were, what's his face, had bailed out, went to Newcastle, and, you know, somebody called Mark, and so he said, what about this boy we've got? Anyway.
Dom got him, Brendan got him. So Dom got him, yeah. Dermot got him, Peter got him, Mark got him.
Right, okay, exactly.
Dermot got through his pal.
Coming back to the discontent and just a general, you know, why people are pissed off. My view on the Mark Lawwell thing is he should never have been appointed, right? no matter if he was good or bad or anything, just the appearance of nepotism was not a good thing. There are a million directors of football in the world. A million. You know what I mean? There's dozens and dozens of guys qualified to take the Celtic job. And even if Mark Lawwell was number one on that list, okay, the difference between him and the guy in second place is not enough to make it worthwhile to take on the appearance of, you know, a nepo baby, a nepotism, and what that subsequently sets up. Because people, you can be the most switched on person in the world or the least switched on person in the world, but, you know, you look at something like that and you go, the chairman's son, director of football? Really? Well, I know Peter Law wasn't.
They sold it to the support and that Ange approved it. It was Ange that wanted them. Just garbage.
Well, I mean, again, who knows? Right. But my point being, you can be switched on, not switched on. You just have to look at that and you think, okay, so I know Peter Law wasn't the chairman when he was appointed, but he subsequently became the chairman, which really, you know, compounded the problem. And you just think, doesn't he smell implies some sort of, no, it just doesn't he feel right. You know, it doesn't feel normal, something that I really can get behind. It's, you know, go and find somebody else. It's not going to make that much of a difference. Mark Lawwell or...
Yeah, go and on. You take your nepotism point. You've got Gordon Strachan doing consulting work from time to time. You've got Gavin Strachan, and you've got Craig Strachan, who's one of our head scouts for Europe, with the fantastic football experience of 14 years working in a pro shop. He's more likely to be able to tell you whether to use Titleist or some other brand of balls. They've got no knowledge of football, these guys. They should not be in the jobs they're in, and they've only got them because of their parents.
Who knows, right? But again, it's all a question of appearances. And, you know, when things are going good, people might not like it, right? But when things are kind of going good, they kind of just overlook it and they go, all right, whatever.
There was no noise made when Mark Lawwell was appointed.
But yeah, none. Transfer windows, the last three have been terrible.
But the point is, the egg has been laid. I don't know if the analogy really works, but the egg has been laid. You know, and that kind of kernel of this doesn't kind of feel right to me. That's there. So when things start going wrong, people get really pissed off, and that's what's happening. So, you know, to deal with that, I don't know if he's leaving or not. I suspect he'll be gone in the summer, but who knows? I know as much as you say, Harry. The club have denied it.
What do you think? Are you allowed to have an opinion on this one?
I articulate my opinions directly to the people in charge of the club.
Oh, yeah.
The point I'm making is, I don't give a shit whether my press pass finishes tomorrow or not, because fortunately I've got a nice life, and that's not the be all and end all of my life. So I'm a huge Celtic fan, and if I get the opportunity to speak to Peter or Michael or Chris or Dermot, I'm going to use that opportunity to tell them where I think Celtic could be a better football club, because that will make my Saturdays more enjoyable. And so every single time I ever get to speak to any of those four people, I tell them exactly what I think about what's not being right. And the biggest thing, so getting back to your silence, Lawrence, the biggest thing is a lack of any plan for anything. When was the first time I spoke with Peter Lawwell? Ronnie Dyer was in charge.
Hotmail.com, the first email.
That's right.
That's an obscure reference that nobody will get, Remy. Nobody.
Ronnie Dyer was in charge, and I was talking about a five-year plan for us to be playing in a European final within 5 years. We should have a plan where everything about what we do is focused on that. And also an infrastructure plan, because if we want to be a Champions League team, we have to behave like a Champions League team. And again, it gives you an indication of how long ago this has been going on. I used to joke, The only person I know who regularly holds press conferences in a tent is Colonel Gaddafi, right? And my point was, we shouldn't be having Champions League press conferences in a tent outside the ground. It's okay for the first couple of Champions League games. We're not ready for this yet. But see, once you, if you want to be, we are a regular participant in group stages and beyond of European football, you have the press facilities, regardless of everything else that should be going on, you have the press facilities to accommodate that. And we still think it's acceptable to, what for me, the messaging that we are therefore conveying is, we don't see ourselves as a permanent member of this club. We're just visiting for a while and then we're back out. And so your point about plans and messaging, we should have a 5-year plan. So why have we got the money in the bank? They should be, see if they got the money in, like, so I understand, building a stadium, not even building a new main stand, not even increasing the capacity, is somewhere 80 to 100 million quid of the stature that, that a club of ours should be doing and all the things you need to do. So I get that's a big debt play for us to be able to go and do. So if the plan is, right, see that 70 million quid, we actually have a 5-year plan. And here's the 5-year plan. We need to get more young talent through into that team to be able to build towards something. We are spending 20 million pounds or 15 million pounds, whatever it is, on Barrowfield in the academy, because UEFA Champions League, we've got a real problem with Champions League requirements for our number of youth players. So we need to spend a chunk of that 70 million quid on that. Features and benefits. We are shite at selling features and benefits. We just say, just let you know, we're spending 50 million pounds in Barrowfield. No, because we're in the shitter at the moment, because we're not producing enough young players for us to tick the Champions League criteria. So we've got to do it. A bit like people bemoaning we spent £1 million on the disco lights, because we just said we spent £1 million and look at our lights we do. We didn't say, because see, if we don't, we are at risk of being fined our Champions League money because the TV companies are complaining about the poor quality of light for games at Celtic Park. So this is a, we've got to do it. And actually, the bit that plays all the disco lights is a £70,000 computer program add-on to the £1 million light setup. So actually, you sell it like that. And if the plan is, we're doing Barrowfield, and then we know we are going to have to do this main stand, and we think we can maybe borrow about 30 million quid. So we need to get 3/4 of the way there. So we need to build this money in the bank. And I know it's really annoying, but the alternative is we will get to a day, because this main stand's nearly 60 years old, we will get to a day where it's just got to happen and we won't have an option in it. So this is our plan. I have gone online and found Red Bull Salzburg's 5-year plan. I have found Copenhagen's 5-year plan. I have found Michelin's 5-year plan. They don't hide it and keep it a secret. They say, this is what we're wanting to do. You go and speak to Chris or Michael or Peter and you talk about Celtic showing ambition and having a 5-year plan. Don't want to tell people about that, because what if we fail? And that, to me, is the problem with Celtic. There is a culture of what if we fail, and that's why the transfer dealings are so shit. Because they don't want to spend £7 million on a player, because what if he fails? Let's spread our bets and buy £2.5 million players. No, you're guaranteeing you're three. We know someone who would absolutely go on in this. You're guaranteeing failure of £2.5 million players for the one position, whereas if you spent £7 million on one player for that one position, there's probably a 70% chance he succeeds. But it's not that for me, they're criticised in the wrong way, right to be criticised, but they are criticised because people think it's some sort of malicious smashing Celtic up principle. It's not. It's an ultra conservative with a small c, and it's such a risk-averse culture. That's the problem.
Yeah, but partly what you're saying about the, you know, tell us how you're going to spend the 70 million and the sort of the fear of failure. They've said that they needed to keep cash back in case we don't qualify for the Champions League. And right now, it's looking like a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah.
Here, absolutely. I think all the stuff that we're talking about, it all leads to one thing, in my view. You know, the control and owner.
Right.
I mean, he's not Desmond.
He's not the owner, but he's classic.
I know that.
What
does he own, Remy? Is it 30%?
And he's got all his pals up behind him.
What is it? Is he? What is Dermot? What's Dermot's share? Is it 32%? I can't remember what it is.
It's about that region.
I thought it was about 43 or something like that, but anyway.
Well, I don't think it's definitely not as much as that.
He's the biggest shareholder, but he's not the owner. But he treats his own personal fiefdom.
I wanted to talk to him when I saw him at the Pebble Beach Pro-Am recently, but he was kind of busy chopping it around like an absolute 25 handicapper.
Were you carrying for him?
Aye. But I think it all comes down to him. You know, it's my view that, you know, his presence stops everything. All the stuff that you're talking about, Brian, you know, all the stasis and all the various departments, you know, particularly the comms department, who said, you know, there's that, you know, the, you know, there's no clarity. There doesn't appear to be any kind of vision. Again, I'm not, you know, the people who are running the club right now and, you know, people going to Peter Lawwell on the board. I mean, these guys are all Celtic fans. They're all Celtic. I mean, mad Celtic fans. So, you know, they're motivated well. But the problem is you have this guy who controls a club who would not tolerate in his other businesses the lack of innovation and forward planning that he appears to tolerate at Celtic. You know, so my view is that in order for Celtic to move on in a way, you're talking about Michelin and Copenhagen and all that. You know, the barrier to us becoming a club like that is the guy who controls the club, because he doesn't appear to be show any. Again, I'm sure he's a Celtic fan in some way, shape, or form, even though he doesn't go to games and never went to games when he was a kid. There's no history of being a Celtic fan, but he doesn't appear to want to change stuff. You know, he doesn't appear. And if you don't want to change stuff, then get out the way. That's my view. Just get out the way. Give it to somebody else.
Yeah, I think he's lost his passion since the potential English Premier League move's gone. And effectively,
fine.
All he wants to do is not put any money in every season. That's it.
That's not even a quote.
That's not, it's not even a, his fans. We don't. He doesn't need to put money in. We've got so much money. It's unbelievable.
The only thing I want for Dermot from Dermot Desmond is for him to fuck off. Right? I don't want his money. You know, just give up control of the club. Give it to people who actually want to innovate, who actually have a clue. Again, I'm sure he has a clue about what makes a modern football club. He has no interest in taking the risk. And, you know, the risk is barely a risk to turn us into Copenhagen, for goodness sake. You know, to explain where the club's going, to try and, you know, get the fans invested in what's going on, you know, get us out of this dreadful, you know, one point better than them mentality. I mean, it's just,
absolutely.
You know, you get a sense that all he's interested in is kind of managing decline. Well, that's not what we want.
I think stake worth, Harry, and can you afford it?
34.64% he owns in Celtic. Which currently equates to about 52%.
Right.
Okay. 52 million.
2 million. So you're just 2 million short.
Just a wee bit short.
Well, the problem is, I get the sense that, you know, if we put together everything, you know, your money, Chris's money, Remy's money, my money, and, you know, your 55 million, Remy's 50 quid, and my $100. You know, above
you
the value.
You own Spotify royalties from.
Aye.
From the 40.
Dermot wouldn't want it. Dermot wouldn't want it. Because he wants, you know, he said, oh, this club is not leaving this club is not leaving the Desmond family. I mean, I wanted to throw up when I read that or heard that. It's just an absolute.
Well, see, here's the interesting thing.
It's the worst thing that could happen to self.
The interesting thing for me about him is, so Dermot is not a buys and builds, a media company or an entertainment company or any sort of consumer orientated company. Dermot is a guy who spots an undervalued business that he thinks value can be added to it and then gets out. That's his track record, right? So, but he's not doing that at Celtic. That's the odd thing.
That's what I'm saying. He tolerates practices at Celtic and looks at the way he manages Celtic. It's completely antipathetical to everything he's done in his entire business life, which, as you say, is a kind of vulture capitalist.
So one of the things that I find odd about all of that is, so you're saying about I mean, one of the things about is you're right about the people having a go at Peter Lawwell. And the thing that slightly gets me about that is, I think all that happened was, by coincidence, when Peter Lawwell wasn't there, we had a necessity to spend money in a slightly different way because of the shit that had hit the fan and going in the season where we went for 10 in a row, right? And it's just a coincidence of timing that when he's come back in, things have changed. I mean, everybody I speak to at Celtic tells me Peter is completely hands off. But equally, the only other side I would add to that is, anybody who's worked in an environment where they had quite a micromanaging manager, if that person leaves, you behave differently. If that person then came back into the room, I mean, this is the most simple analogy I would be, my son's playing on his Xbox just now with his mates. If I walked into the room, he will talk differently the second I'm in the room. Even if I'm not saying anything, just my presence there will change the way that he is. And so I'm not saying that Mickelson's a child, but even if Peter's not having any input, just his and even if he's not telling them to do stuff, just his presence in the boardroom, even unintentionally, would have an impact on how things go. But equally, Peter is just like every accountant I have ever met who's an exceptionally, yes, and pointing at you, who's an exceptionally senior level in a business. They've got there because of the type of person they are. They are a prudent, risk-averse, conservative decision-maker, and money people like them because they don't put their money at risk. And so I think Peter was there for 17 years because he knew what Dermot wanted without Dermot having to tell him, and he knew how to manage upwards. And then that's created just a general culture around the club. So I don't think Dermot needs to sit there and say, we do X, Y, Z. That's just the culture that's been bred into the place.
What a podcast is, you get behavioural psychology, you get a bit of business swearing, bit of communications theory.
but I think it's really simplistic when people just go on Twitter and say, Peter Lawwell, get the fuck. Nothing's going to change because it's a culture that's there.
I agree with that. Desmond sets the agenda and he should go as well. I agree. He's got to go as well.
Well, five minutes ago you were shouting about Peter Lawwell and Mark Lawwell having to go. They're not the issue.
No, but they need to go because the perception of the perception of the fans. So they're associated with it. I'm not saying it's their fault. I'm just saying that's just the perception of fans. So there's the perception becomes reality. Is that not, that's nonsense? So it just is what it is.
Mark Lawwell has never scouted a player in his life. But if he's been set a budget, as you say, of we can't buy £7 million players, buy £2.5 million, he's not the guy to find those players. So he's failed. He's maybe failed because of the constraints, but he has failed and he's tainted by the Nepo baby blink.
But tell me if this is part of my theory around stuff, right? Dermot thinks we can't achieve anything. So it is about managing us financially so that we participate the odd time in Champions League football because that's the best we can do. He has a different perception of what we can achieve. And so we're doing okay. Mark Lawwell has come from Man City where they think Scottish football shite and we're a diddy club from Scottish football. So his perception of the level of player that is good enough for us is lower. So he is shopping in a lower market because his perception is that that's all we are good enough. And then, again, the whole thing about that's who Ange wanted. Again, my perception, everything I hear from, I mean, well, as we know, Ange only signed players that were with his agency. He only signed people who were with base. He bypassed our scouting team and went straight for... used his agency to scout players because he didn't. But my perception is then the club are starting to say to Ange, yeah, but we can't have that. We want to at least have some sort of structure about it. Mm-hmm. And so the big thing is Ange recommends Mark Lawwell. So, well, there's two reasons why you'd recommend Mark Lawwell. One, you've dealt with him, and you know that he was shunted to the far reaches of the Citigroup empire out in the Far East. So that's part number one. Number two, and you got on well with him, so you know that you would be able to deal with him. And number two, you know he's a shoe-in for the job because he's a Lawwell.
Yeah. You mean he didn't sign Haaland for Man City?
Well, hang on a minute. Both of you, I'm really uncomfortable with this. It's a kind of character assassination going on here. You've no idea, Remy, where Mark Lawwell scouted a player at. None. You don't know that.
I do, actually. He hasn't.
Well, you don't know what he was doing at Man City.
I do, actually.
Anyway, to me, you're both picking on the wrong quotes-unquote culprits. The culprit's Dermot Desmond. He sets the tone, and
you can't get him out.
But again, well, get him out or not get him out, but he should be the one who's identified as a problem, which he is. He's the one that sets the parameters. He's the one that's happy with this, backward thinking, no progress, no change, no innovation. Again, we all laugh, and I hate doing this, right? I've no idea where these boys across the city are any good, right? But I do know that they're all under 40, and I'm guessing they're listening to the same podcasts as I'm listening to, and reading up on Matthew Bentham and Benham rather, and all these other these new innovations in scouting and data and analytics. I bet they're far more in tune with anything that we've got, and I kind of know that because I read it. And you read it in the Rangers Review or wherever it is. But Dermot's a problem. Don Mackay was in for, don't really know. I'm happy to admit it, unlike you, Rem. But happy to, I don't know what Don Mackay's management style was. I've heard different stories. But I do know that he had a million ideas about how to take the club from where it was into a transformation into one of these European clubs that we all talk about, Copenhagen and all that crowd. But he lasted.
An analog club in a digital age.
Yeah. There you go. He was right.
Hasn't. Still has.
We still are.
Yeah, but it's interesting, right? You mentioned about we need to get Dermot out. So here is the challenge that perplexes me, right? And it came into my head. Before Christmas, there was the advert on the radio, Euro lottery jackpot was like 200 million quid, right? And somebody says to me, what would you do if you won that, Brian? First thing you do is buy Celtic, eh? Right? And the first thing that comes to my head is, things have moved on. You couldn't afford to buy Celtic with that amount. I mean, you could, but you couldn't really. You would just blow all your money and you would none left and you wouldn't be able to support it and it'd be a waste of time, right? But it then gets you thinking, I thought, yeah, but what I would do is, if you want 200 million quid, you'd take about 40, 50 million quid of that, and then you go to a top money entity, and you would say, I need you to help me build a group of investors around this so that I can create a consortium, and I'm going to go and knock on Dermot's door. Because if Celtic at the point is worth 120 million quid and his shareholding's worth 50 odd, for a start, you're going to have to buy Dermot and all his mates out. So you do have to buy the whole thing, whole kit and kit. Well, 75% of it probably, right? Plus, the minute somebody's coming knocking the door wanting to buy the whole thing, he's wanting his share price at 150% of what it currently is. So you're immediately looking to have to spend the full 120 million quid of that. So you need to build a consortium to do that. Now, I'm not saying that you and I know people who are worth that amount of money, but I know wealthy Celtic supporters, and none of them, this is what I don't understand, none of the very wealthy Celtic supporters who listen to this, so they're all listening to it, none of them talk about even the thought process of doing that process of trying to build a consortium to take him out, and they all are actually very defensive of the board the minute you speak to them in the club. And I find that odd.
They all think they're doing a great job.
Yeah, I find it really, really odd. If I ever speak to, and all of us on here know more than one exceptionally wealthy Celtic fan, and we're not one of them, who all defend the board when you criticise them. Now, I get the principle of if you've been in that different world, you do come a bit defensive of people who know nothing about the complexities of that job, having a go at it, and we can all be a bit, what do you really know, type thing. I get that. But I just don't understand when I'm having that the conversation where I then rip out all the stats about how Copenhagen have got a higher coefficient than us, have a better return on investment than us in player trading, and have a turnover at best a third of ours. Midtjylland, better return on investment, same coefficient as us, but they come like a rocket up behind with 10% of our revenues. And I go through all the teams, and they hear all of that, and they are never prepared to criticise the club. They always defend it. And I, can either of you two defend the board, and can either of you two explain why that is, why you think that is?
Well, I think the issue is Dermot, because Dermot controls everything, you know. And you know, the board, I can't be bothered with people slaughtering the board. I mean, you can get it. I mean, you two have been going on about for years. Oh, non-executive directors, or you should be there for 5 years, whatever. I get all that, but it's Dermot that tolerates all this. It's Dermot that sets this. It's Dermot that allows this to happen, and it's all stuff that he wouldn't tolerate in these other businesses. It's crazy. And people say, well, Dermot's a big Celtic fan. Well, if Dermot was truly a Celtic fan, the thing that he could do that could help Celtic the best is to leave, is to get out, is to sell his stake to somebody else at face value, because he doesn't need the money. I mean, is he 72, 73-year-old? I mean, how much money do you need? Do us a favour. Do us all a favour. Sell the club at a reasonable price, not a massive premium. And let people who are younger, more vigorous, have more ideas, are more clued in, take over. And guess what, Dermot? You have a seat for life in the boat in director's box. You can come anytime you want, i.e. you will never come anyway. And you enjoy the fruits of a new regime. You know, when Harry Brady takes over as director of football / director of marketing / head of scouting.
You know who we would who I would have as the director of football.
Well, we all do, don't we? But
your son.
That's the point.
No, apparently I'm only allowed to employ people who went to St Aloysius or have got the same surname as me or my best mate. That's the Celtic system at the moment.
But,
so.
But that the point is that's where it's. So all the other stuff you can, I mean, I can bitch away about communications, but only one guy has the capacity to change that or to tell people to change that, and that's Dermot.
No, I agree. I mean, I've got issues with the board individually, but I appreciate they are all walking to the beat of Dermot's drum, and so I think some of the criticism, that the personalised criticism, is just unpleasantly
awful
and wrong, right? But this is my point, Remy, right? So these wealthy Celtic fans that we know, they know, right, who buys football clubs now at our price level and above? Hedge funds, American hedge funds, sovereign wealth funds, and gangsters, you know, like oligarch gangsters, you know, like people, you know, sports washing people. That's what I'm talking about. Sports washing people, right? That's who buys football clubs. Yeah. They know how to contact. Now, I'm not saying I want sports washing people and whatever, but the point being, they know who are the people. Now, you and I on this podcast, the why we want rid of Dermot, because I believe Celtic could be regularly participating in Champions League football and whatever, have a better player trading model based on someone that we know and a decent scouting network. I reckon our revenue could be pushed up to 140, 150, right?
But I think, what to go back to your point earlier, though, why are some of these wealthier people and sort of corporate supporters not rocking the boat, or why do you think it's all right? We have a huge percentage of our support who are happy to be 1 point ahead of the Huns. They don't care about Europe. Win the Scottish League, that's enough. Win the treble, that's it. It's not. We need to be in Europe doing well. That mob across the city are playing in Europe after Christmas every year. We don't. We just get humped. It's embarrassing for a club of our size with our resources to be as poor as we are in Europe.
So this is my pitch to
Scotland and in Europe.
So this is my pitch to the funds that are out there. Look at Celtic. Look how many trophies they've won the last wee while, and I think it's underperforming. And here's the reason why I think it's underperforming, and I'm not going to bore people on here, but I would run through all the player trading stats across 15 clubs, and I would say, right, you gear up that model, and you suddenly add 30, 40 million pounds a year onto that revenue. You have a core support that's not going anywhere, 60,000 every week, that if you have domestic success, they will be happy. But you add that 30, 40 million pounds of additional revenue every year onto it. They've got 70 million pounds in the bank just now. Appreciate the day after we had 70 million pounds in the bank, we probably spent 15 million pounds on corporation tax, so it was never that level. But they've got a healthy balance sheet, and they've managed to attain a healthy balance sheet winning stuff. Just think what would happen. But the problem is, see that board member and that board, see those three people who are on the board, to give you an idea of the staleness of the club. They've been on the board since before the iPhone and Twitter were invented. That'd be my pitch to the money people.
Amazing stat, that.
That'd be my pitch to and I'm convinced you could speak to it. So what I just still can't get my head around. There are people who are listening to this right now, and you know who you are, who could pull that consortium together and would, or at least would know who to speak to.
And Blackberry, have you seen that film?
No.
That film is really good, really good. The guy just totally dismisses Apple, and watch it. It's good.
And you're right. So Dermot's the issue.
He is.
Because Dermot, and people are criticising the board for their staleness of ideas and their staleness of culture, and we've got no obvious ambition, but that's driven by them delivering what they know the guy who pays their bills wanted. I mean, how many people listening to this podcast would go, my boss wants me to work this way, but you know what? I think it'd be better if I worked completely different and completely pissed him off and put my job at risk, and so I can go home at night and tell my wife that we can't pay the mortgage at the weekend. No. You know, I find it peculiar that football fans don't think exactly, you know, well, if I was in those shoes, would I piss off Dermot? No, because look what happened to Dom. Now, I'm not saying Dom McKay was the right guy or the wrong guy. Certainly there's enough people that I've spoken to who were in Celtic at the time. I've heard complete opposite opinions, but there is a reasonable chunk of people who thought, brilliant, this is exactly what we need. And the perception is it was just a bit too much. We're a club of evolution, not revolution.
Well, that's where we are today.
No, either, but we don't evolve.
No, I know we don't even evolve. No. The biggest problem was Ange winning the league. I'm not saying I didn't want it, but it made them believe that the 10-0 season was just a blip, and they could revert back to what they've been doing. They didn't see that the 10-0 was the culmination of years of incremental not making change.
Mm-hmm.
It was a peculiar set of circumstances with the COVID season. There was no supporters in. There was no pressure on Rangers. There was all the decisions that the Sturgeon made that had a particular negative impact on Celtic.
Yes, they're allowed to use different labs to test their players.
Yeah, one club used a lab in Northern Ireland, and the other 11 clubs in the SPFL used a Scottish lab. One club had different busing criteria. Celtic and Kilmarnock suddenly get told they've got different criteria for being on a bus overnight. The First Minister messages, or the head of the health, whatever it was, the dentist guy messages the SPFL and basically says, make an example of Celtic for going to Dubai, even though they asked if they could go and they were told yes. All of that's true. But my perception is that by winning the league under Ange, we've managed to persuade ourselves that was just all of those circumstances is what created that, and it was just complete blip. And actually, look, we won all those trophies, blip season, back to winning the trophies again.
Fair enough. Sounds about right. We'll probably Probably should talk about the football at some stage. It's a football podcast, this, isn't it?
No, it's a Celtic Football Club. What we're talking about is money, same as the board.
So on that, as we're recording this, Joe Hart has announced he's retiring from football.
Yes, sorry.
First of all, I'm going to ask you, Lawrence.
Yeah.
Well, here we go. The goalkeeper doyens are going to keep it to themselves.
Oh, aye.
Cammy Fraser, what do you think about that?
There's one for the teenager.
When we get to slow moving left backs, Remy, we'll talk to you about this.
I'm still faster than Greg Taylor, but we'll go on to that.
Do you know what I was looking at on my TikTok? Believe it or not, I've got a TikTok feed, and there was what's his face? Vincent Kompany was on. Well,
I thought TikTok was banned in your country, was it not?
No. He was on the overlap with Gary Neville, and he was asked, you know, who was the biggest and most influential figure during the two titles that he won, Man City, and he said Joe Hart. And you know, when he was saying when he first turned up at the club, he was a kind of joking kind of figure, and he grew into this immense leader. You know, that's a Premier League winning team. Joe Hart was a big figure in that team. You know, with characters like Vincent Kompany and, you know, whoever else, Aguero and all those boys. I mean, there's, you know, so there's that. It was also not when he came to us. Obviously, he was well past his sell-by date. Had a decent first season. I mean, again, we talked about Juco James earlier on, a brilliant stat. He produced in a podcast not so long ago saying that he was the worst goalkeeper in the Champions League this year. Which, you know, statistically, provably the worst goalkeeper in the Champions League. So I know Remy's going to come in here and pile in and say he should have gone 2 years ago and all that, but I think it seems like, from everything I hear, an absolutely brilliant guy, smart guy, very self-aware. I think he was aware that Celtic were looking for a new goalkeeper this season, and he was quite happy, you know, quite happy with that, understood why. Not his fault that we didn't find somebody else. I mean, he's just doing his job to the best of his ability. So I don't think on the day that he announces his retirement from football at the end of the season that anybody should be piling in. Well,
he's got a contract. We should have bought a new goalkeeper in the summer at worst, because his second season was a massive decline from the first. His first season was good, but he was starting on a very low base. He wasn't Barkas, but he was good. And he was obviously a leader, and he was obviously enjoying it. Second season, massive downturn. Obviously, he should have been replaced in the summer. And if we had to see out his contract, he should have been helping mentor the new goalie. You know, in his defence, he is not Scott Bain or Benjamin Siegrist, but he is not good enough to be the number one for Celtic. And he has proved it this season. He is chipping goals left, right and centre.
I think that's more true in Europe. But anyway, I mean, great servant.
Domestically, he has thrown some goals into the net.
The point being that, you know, great, great football career. Been decent for Celtic, decent enough, certainly in his first year. Obviously declined. But again, the reason for that, and it really isn't really his fault. I mean, you know,
we all
have time and all that. Well, yeah, time remains undefeated.
He had one good season out of three, so he's not been. He's been all right. That's about all I could say.
Right. Well, but my point is, I don't think we should be, you know, talking about his departure in an entirely derogatory sense. And that's what I was feeling. That's what you were going to do, Remy. And I don't think we should be doing that. So
he had a good first season.
Yeah. Well, again, it's slightly, you know, damned with faint praise. My point being, thanks for the service, Joe. Great career. Enjoy your retirement. There you go.
I think he was exactly what we needed in that season. We had
Shite goalie.
No, we had so much disarray in terms of no squad that we needed. My attitude, I always thought that what had happened was Ange thought, if I can get an experienced goalkeeper, he can control that defence. and I can concentrate on other parts of the team. And I think having a strong personality at the back of the back four is what we needed in that first season under Ange. So,
yeah, and it worked for a season, and then it didn't.
So that's Joe Hart. 100%
agree. That is not his fault.
No, it's not his fault. So that's Joe Hart. So then on to, we are playing Motherwell at the weekend. So we could be 5 points behind by the time we play that game.
Yep.
And based on that thing I was talking about, is my concern is that part of our problem is just a general negativity. And a team that seems to be lacking confidence, so it's then risk averse in every decision making that the players are making on the park. In terms of where to pass, that's my biggest concern at the moment. So, but you're right, Remy, we play better away from home because you've not got 60,000 people who are in a bad mood.
Correct.
Moaning about every pass that's not inch perfect.
And that's entirely not their fault. Dermot Desmond's fault. I'm telling you, we should be...
Fuck's sake, McGregor, I'm going to say it's Dermot Desmond's fault, though.
I'm telling you, we're too old now, but people should be outside the stand, not shouting at the board, shouting at Dermot Desmond, because he's not be there.
Is that going to happen? I think we've seen all the stuff that's happened in Germany. Something like that's going to happen here. I think that's pretty obvious.
And the problem is the person that needs to get the message isn't there and won't see it.
No.
You could anyway. When you were following him round, videoing all his bad duck hooks.
Hiding in the bushes.
I deny that.
Coughing, you know, just as his backswing.
Do you know what? I mean, there's nobody listening to this podcast at this stage. Nobody. So I think I can safely describe, he was playing with Ludwig Åberg. There's no golfers out. He's a big new star. And in the same group was Rory McIlroy. What was odd to me was him and McIlroy, you would think they'd be best mates, been around each other a lot. And he barely said a word to McIlroy. And I mentioned this to somebody and he said, oh, Dermot's he's a very introverted guy. Doesn't he talk to many people? Doesn't he? I was shocked by that. So, but he'll not be at the Celtic. He'll be some pro-am somewhere in Singapore or...
Does he talk to consortiums? Do you know?
I tell you, he'll no talk to Harry Brady. That's for sure. He'll no take his phone call.
Oh, he's going to be floating the windy at the main door at Parkhead. He's not getting in.
The Motherwell game, you are right. Rangers are playing Hearts. Hearts are not bad. I mean, you...
Hearts.
Oh, that is an absolute... If Harry's given me the shush, I won't bother. You know what would have been funny there, Remy, if Harry had been able to prove that he had Dermot's phone number, but he couldn't do that. So
I thought he was his bank statement and a direct debit had come out.
But Hearts are not a bad... I mean, again, in the context of Scottish football right now in 2024, Hearts are not a bad side. So you never... I mean... Could be 5 points, could be three, could be two.
There you go, late penalty, probably. That'll be something like that.
I've got a mate who's a Hearts fan. He has Celtic sympathies, quite unusual. But his dad was a Hearts fan, came through at Glasgow, Celtic sympathies, but he's a Hearts fan. He sent me a text message last season, I think it was, saying, it is embarrassing how much harder we try against you compared to Rangers. Because although we beat them in general... They give us a harder game than they give to the Rangers. And that was his moan.
When Rangers go to Tynecastle, they usually stroll it.
Mm-hmm.
Always got a far harder game.
Anyway, Motherwell on Sunday, we were going to pick a team.
Oh, God.
Are we picking?
Go and pick a team.
Well, with Joe Hart's and goals.
Mm-hmm.
What about, is Johnston back? AJ, is he back? Or is he
supposed to be back? But I don't know if that's true or not, but he's supposed to be back.
Right. Well, if he's back, then he's playing. Then CCV, he's got to be back, hasn't he?
Allegedly,
he should be back. Yeah. So then you've got the. I don't get why we're not playing the Polish. I mean, the left-sided centre-back pings a good ball. I mean, given the way that teams are playing us now, we should at least mix it up a little bit. Brendan, I know Brendan's averse to pinging a long ball.
No, it's interesting you say that, because when Nasrocki played at Pittodrie, and in the first half, he hit at least three balls quick over the top to Kyogo, his strength, which led to Palmer's disallowed goal. Second half, Nasrocki fell to pieces. Lucky not to get sent off. Majovski destroyed him at the goal. And he looked really, really slow. And he's not really featured as a starter since then. However, we paid quite a lot of money. For me, the scales experiment has to stop. He's too slow. He's not a good defender. He spends half a game in his arse diving in. He distributes the ball too slowly, and he never hits it in front of people, which is a real thing that pisses me off. He's had too many chances. Teams have sussed him. Even McInnes was being smug, saying, we let players have the ball who we wanted to have the ball. At least Nasrocki can pass a ball. If he's got Carter Vickers beside him, he'll look better. So I would give Nasrocki a go.
Yeah.
I don't get the liking of Scales. It's beyond me. I'm watching a player who's muscled off the ball, lacks pace, lacks positional awareness. We've lost goals because he's nowhere to be seen.
Yep.
And, you know, Aberdeen, when people were having a go at Nasrocki about it, we were Scales. Kilmarnock at Rugby Park, we were Scales. European football.
Last week he got outpaced by Kevin Van Veen. Now, at that point, you should be actually examining your career at that point. It was his head, he loses the ball. He loses sight of the ball all the time.
Yeah, he looks up and then has to look down to see where the ball's gone because he's moving and he's forgotten to take the ball. And then people talk about his passing stats, but he does lots of very simple passing. But see if you have a watch, see if he has the ball for more than about 3 or 4 seconds. And then the fans are starting to get agitated because he needs to release the ball. He then eventually just hits it somewhere. He just hits it forward.
He did better than I thought he would, but he's reverted to the mean. Yeah, I know he's Brendan's project. It has to stop. We have to change the back four.
Right, we've got consensus on that. So Greg Taylor's playing left back. And then the mid. I'm guessing we'll play 4-4-1-1. So midfield, fuck. Well, you've got McGregor's in, obviously, O'Reilly's in. I'm slightly concerned about O'Reilly. I don't know if he's carrying an injury. Certainly since the break, he hasn't looked at the player that he was. Maybe he's just exhausted.
Went to Atletico Madrid, you mean?
Well, I don't think professional footballers act like that. You're too negative, Remy.
I think his head's been turned. He's not played well since the winter break.
Well, we haven't played well since the winter break. Celtic haven't played well. I think he's been...
Winter break and he was playing really well.
I think there might be somewhat a little bit of exhaustion in that, but he's got to keep playing. Then after that, those two are settled in midfield. Again, you're saying Hatate's maybe 3 or 4 weeks away. That's a shame. Could do with him. So Keogh is going to play that slightly... I guess Ida's going to play as a striker tonight, and Kyogo's going to play slightly deeper than him. Then out wide, I mean, oh my God, take your pick. I mean, I can't. I mean, it's just an absolute...
He'll definitely be one of them. But he's got all the technology of my washing machine. I mean, he's just...
Well,
he's got no ball awareness whatsoever. He can run all day, Ange master, but my God, he's just not...
You're talking about a guy who was a first choice centre forward for the Japanese national team, which are no mugs in the World Cup.
Yes, and not in the Asian Cup because he's not played. He was a sub for them. He's a great worker. He's got no technical ability. Can't cross a ball. Can't have a winger that can't cross a ball.
Well, maybe he should be playing as an out and out striker then, which is where he played for in that World Cup. I mean, he played as a
But instead of
pressing,
instead of Adam Eder. So well, who's your taker then?
Well, that's right. You bring, you know, hopefully we just don't get a penalty in the second minute. So we'd have to bring him on. I mean, that is quite astonishing. We signed a player basically to take our penalties. That's quite unbelievable. But
he tries hard, but he looks the limited player we thought we were getting.
Yeah. And then again, one position left. I mean, you know, Kuhn's been, again, I know it's early days, but my goodness, he looks like a guy who cannot believe what he's landed in.
He looks like a 10 player playing in under 18s.
He looks petrified. He looks absolutely, yep. Petrified. And I guess simply because he's never been in a situation where the pressure, the demands are so elevated. I mean, he had
supposedly one of the best dribbling stats in Europe. He doesn't take men on. He's supposed to be again, quick. Doesn't look it.
Again, that's I think that might be related to what I'm saying. He just looks scared. I would be inclined to give him. I would be inclined to pick him until he kind of realizes that actually, you know what, he gets
10 feet away from all the maniacs. It's a wee tight ground. Under Rodgers, we traditionally struggle there. We don't tend to win handily there. Their support is pretty horrible. The one thing I would say in their favour, they've got a cracking pitch now, which should help us, but I really worry about our physicality, and I wouldn't be surrendering the midfield. I wouldn't be playing a two-man midfield in Kyogo in front of Fir Park.
Anyway, I guess, you know, that's about, I mean, it's, the scary thing is, nine of the first 11 is base picks itself, you know, if everybody's fit. And, you know, that first 11 doesn't seem to be doing the job right now. That's what kind of somewhat scares me.
Yeah, but, and I think earlier, when you look at what's going to be on the bench, and that's one of the reasons why we struggle in the second half of games, we bring on inferior quality players because the legs are starting to go. And unfortunately, for a guy who in his first spell used to make inspired substitutions, like, you know, he took Izaguirre off at Fir Park after 20 minutes when we were getting hammered. He went two up front when we had 10 men at Ibrox. All he does now is just change it like for like, and it's not working. And teams are overrunning us in the second half.
So apart from that, looking good.
And that's not Dermot Desmond's fault.
You quickly mentioned his first spell. I don't know if people have seen it yet, but there's a new series of Sunderland Till I Die on Netflix. It's only a three-parter. The last show, part three, is an absolute gut punch. It's magnificent. But is Paddy Roberts features... But Paddy Roberts is in there doing, well, certainly what you see in the documentary, he's doing a decent job for Sunderland. Brendan seems to have lost a bit of his mojo. I'll give you that. That's not Dermot's fault.
I think it helps him that folk like Harry Brady give out his address. You know, the guy must be living in fear.
At least I'm not giving out his Hotmail address.
No.
Anyway, so that's my team, Harry. I don't know if we're going to do a score prediction. I think we'll squeak it. I think it has to turn at some point. This might be the weekend. Maybe the Brendan's unlocked something. At this stage, actually, it's all about mentality, isn't it? And, you know, if I'd any message to send out there to the last four listeners is, you know, try and get behind the team, you know.
The support is behind the team, but the team isn't giving enough back. And you've got guys like McGregor, you know, who absolutely, his bottle crashed last week when he hoofed that one in the air under no pressure whatsoever. You've got him telling you that some of the players need to learn what it means to be a winner. You've got Greg Taylor telling you the same thing. That is really, really worrying. Brendan Rodgers had a whole week to prepare for that game last week. I knew how Kilmarnock were going to play. Why would you bring on another striker when you're 1-0 up with 5 minutes to go? Stick Iwata or something on, try and bottle up the game. That's what he used to do with Beaton. No anymore. It's all like for like. We're under pressure. We can't get the ball out. And we struggle with crosses in against our very poor back four.
Do you know what the best moment? The best moment of the last month, Celtic, was immediately after the final whistle at the Hibs game, when Aida scored the penalty to win the game, and you could see the players were really into it. You could see the fans. I mean, the fans basically pulled the team over the line that night. And I thought, you know, that's it. That's the moment.
That was a turning point. I think the thing that really galped with Ralston, who I'm not a massive fan of, that tackle he won, which was 70-30 in the Hibs players' favour, and a minute later we've got a penalty. Oh, well, 5 minutes later after VAR, but you know what I mean? It was the same move. I thought that's a league-winning moment, and I thought scoring the penalty, at least was bouncing in the way over that wee narrow bridge after the game. You think, that's it, they've finally turned the corner, and then the next week, same old flat garbage.
See, your point about Kuhn and who to play, it's summed up by, and this is the problem, about why he can't get the wingers right, because he's got too many of the same quality. So he plays people for a week or two, and it was summed up by Telio, it doesn't help, and when you're competing with 8 or 9 other wingers who are just as good as you, if not better. That is the problem. We, getting back to the summer transfer window, midfield, we play with three in the middle. And our first choice three are going to be Hitati, O'Reilly, McGregor, right? So that means if at any one time, one of them is injured. So that then means only one. So you're looking for one midfielder. And we sign Iwata, he's on loan, so we sign Iwata, we sign Kwon, we sign Holm, and we sign Bernardo. We signed 4 players for one position, all at about £2.5 to £3 million. For that, spread the risk in case they don't succeed. But actually, by signing 4 for one position, Kwon doesn't get game time, although I'm speaking to a St Mirren fan that I know, and he's telling me about how Kwon is just a different league above everybody else in that team, right? But Kwon's not getting game time. The manager rates Holm, but he needs to get there, and he needs game time to develop to the player that the manager thinks he can be. But the problem is, the manager's also got Bernardo, who's just marginally ahead of Holm in that development race. So the manager plays Holm, marks up in an away European game, takes him out, plays Bernardo. Bernardo doesn't mark up, so he keeps playing Bernardo, right? And then Iwata's been injured. But if Iwata was there, you've got that. Exactly the same with the wingers. Palmer, Maeda, Abada. We go and sign Kuhn. We had Mikey Johnson.
Forrest.
Forrest can no longer beat a man and doesn't use pace. Palmer can't beat a man and doesn't use pace. Maeda's got pace but can't put a cross in. Kuhn allegedly has got pace and can beat a man, but has not demonstrated that. Abada, well, there's a whole lot of shite going on in his life that I wouldn't want to be having to deal with if I was just a young lad that Abada's got to deal with, right? So you go, but the manager's then got the option of, well, I'll play Kuhn, but he's not delivering, so I can play Palmer or I can play Maeda because they're of the same standard and they might just deliver because I need someone to deliver just now. That's the problem with their summer transfer window. Instead of, I'm just going to sign one guy for £6-7 million and he's worth it.
Can you recall a transfer window that so many of them would get shipped out or were going to get shipped out within 4 or 5 months? Because, I mean, Lagerbielka was going until Carter Vickers got injured. He played a minute. We should have got rid of that boy. But Kwon was away. Tilio's away. It's like we've signed, we do not really have a guaranteed first team starter out of that transfer window. It's really, really bad.
The one that I remember, well, not terribly well, remember Rangers signed Jelovic. Walter Smith spent the entire, everything, gambled it all on that one player, and I think that he won in the league that year. It was 2009, I can't remember. But that's an example of what you're talking about, Harry. Mm-hmm.
2011, I think it was.
Was it whatever it was? He was a game changer. Game changer. So that's what. But again, there's no point in.
Harry's absolutely right. If we'd have bought £1.7 million player instead of £1.5 million players, but it goes back to the, what if we spend £5 million and it doesn't work out? But if you take our big, our record signing is Edward.
Mm-hmm.
He worked out all right. I mean, £6 million, Jota and Carter Vickers, they worked out all right.
Mm-hmm.
Julian was £7 million. He got a bad injury, but up to that, he was okay, apart from, he got bullied by Lyndon Dykes on a shit pitch. It happens, right? But Julian, I would have said, was a success. Scored a winning goal against Lazio and a winning goal in a cup final. He was all right. You go back to 2000 when we signed Chris Sutton and Neil Lennon for £6 million and Hartson for £6 million. They were all successful players, yet we're grubbing around in the Korean second division. I'll tell you the winger we forgot, Yang. He can beat a man, but he can't cross a ball. He's got no end product, but he's got all the skill in the world. But you're looking at, when we spend big for us, they tend to be successful. And that goes back to your point, Harry, about spend the money because there's much more chance of a more expensive player being good. And then somebody will turn around and say, oh, so-and-so was £60 million and he failed. It happens, right? But if you spend £4-6 million on four players, three of them will be good for our life.
Who knows? None of us are in the know, despite what people. Yeah, we'll get slagged off. But anyway, I think the Barkas signing terrified a lot of them there. I think that was a real oh my god, because I don't know what the number. I think it was five million might have been reported. I think it was a wee bit more than that, and that was an absolute. I mean, a 100% failure.
But John Barnes signed Raphael Scheidt for £6 million. If you take that one and say, oh, well, we should never spend £6 million a player again, it doesn't work like that.
Yeah, and actually what we did was John Barnes sold Raphael Scheidt, and as recently as about 3-4 months before COVID, somebody senior at Celtic was using that as an example as to why we don't sign players from South America.
Unbelievable, isn't it? It was 20 years on.
Yeah. To be fair, we did offer Rivaldo a trial.
So, Remy, what's your team for the Motherwell game?
Same back four. Midfield, I would bring him in from the cold. I would actually have Bernardo playing from the start.
Thought you were going to say McCarthy there when you said I'm bringing him from the cold.
he could have a Wata, but it's probably a bit of a risk. He's not played for, 3 months or something? But at least he'll be on the bench. I would start Bernardo. I would drop Ida. I would play Kyogo up front. As you say, it's a lucky bag for the wingers. Maeda will be one of them. Palmer was so bad last week. It won't be him. I think he'll maybe go with Yang, but for the second half he'll get hooked for Kuhn or Palmer. Nothing sure. We'll be juggling the wingers again, and then you can put Ida on for Kyogo. At least you've got Oro as well. But Ida's it's not working for me, and Kyogo is not a number 10. Holds on.
Can we bring
Doesn't see can passes.
Can we bring Ida on if we get a penalty and then take him off again?
American football, just a kicker.
That's probably one of the rules you as an innovator would be bringing in.
Yeah, that's right.
Rangers will bring Tavernier on. He's 85.
Here's a question for you, Remy. Would you have signed Majowski from Aberdeen?
Now, having seen him, at the time I wouldn't have, but now that I've seen him, I would have, yes, because he's better than our backup strikers. And the interesting thing is, here's a question. I know we probably don't want to go in anymore, but if Kyogo had been called up by Japan, what was our plan?
Postpone games.
Roger said we weren't going to do it. So what would we have done? We didn't buy a striker. We got Ida on the last day of deadline day. That was it. We could have gone four games without a striker. Mental. So, yes, I would have signed Mayovsky. I mean, Aberdeen might have wanted maybe half a million more than we were willing to pay. We've got the money.
Yeah, because that's the final thing before I ask your score predictions. We are, what is it, 3 weeks late already? The normal issuing our interim report, our interim accounts.
I'm going for 5 o'clock tomorrow night.
I'm going for 5 o'clock tomorrow night as well.
The reason being what?
They don't want the analysis in the papers and the radio and everything about an 80 million bank account or whatever it is.
Yeah, so the rumour's 92 million quid. Actually, if you look at where our previous year's financial year end has been and what we normally announce at the interims, it will be somewhere in the region of 85 to 90 million quid.
And that's why they just want it released at 5 o'clock and the papers are all away for the night and there will be nothing said about it. And there's not a home game the next day either.
Yeah.
Anyway, 2-1 us.
Lawrence?
2-0 us. And I want to ask you a question before we sign off.
Right, okay, cool.
Will Brendan Rodgers be the manager in the first game of the season next year?
No.
Why is that?
Right now, I don't think we're going to win the league. And if we don't win the league, he should be gone.
Harry?
I don't know.
I will say in my defence, I thought we were going to win the league quite comfortably up until last Saturday. But how bad? It's happening too often, the really bad performances.
So did I, because I thought we'll match them. We may not be playing well. We'll match some results and we will draw at Ibrox and beat them at Celtic Park. Because when we played them, we'd be beating them. In fact, our better games have been against, I mean, despite our Champions League performances, our better performances have been against better teams.
I think the manager is motivated and fired up for those games, and some of the players are, but they're not for the run-of-the-mill, and unfortunately you need to win the run-of-the-mill games to win the league.
Lawrence, do you think he'll be manager?
I think he will, actually. I think we'll win the league. I think there'll be big changes next summer, though.
If he wins, he gets to stay. But if he doesn't, right now, hand in heart, that's an off podcast, isn't it? Right now, I don't think he's going to win the league. So if he don't win the league, he's not going to be there.
I think, there's just something that's different about him as a person this time compared to last time. There's just a spark that appears to be missing. He's critical of the team in a way that he never, ever was last time.
It throws him under the bus all the time.
And there's just something, I know his wife loves it here.
That's what they said, reason he's here.
And I know he feels as though he scratched the itch of being in the Premiership and likes Celtic and wants to be at Celtic. The issue for me is, I think it's now got to the point where I think there's just a breakdown between, unfortunately, him being here and the Lawwells being there.
Right, but if you take that point, right, there's nothing you can do about a recruitment team till, you know, we can't buy players. I mean, okay, we could maybe get the boy, the Palestinian boy that wants to play for nothing. Now, I would take him, right, because he's a fast winger. I would take him, because that would immediately give some of the people in the stadium a lift, right? But we'd have a winger who could run and beat a man and wants to be there, says he'll play for free. That's actually ideal for Celtic. But we can't do anything recruitment-wise between now and the summer. What we've got is what we have to go with till the end of the season. Those players, most of those players have been here and know they have to win the league. So when are the performances going to improve and the intensity levels increase and the horseshoe be chucked in the bin?
Well, we'll see. I mean, we're all just guessing, aren't we? But I think we've still got enough to win the league. I think not to any great extent, but I think he'll turn it around enough. And then I think come the summer, I think there'll be wholesale changes everywhere. I think even at this stage, Dermot's going to have to screw the nut. I mean, ideally, he would disappear, sell it to a Harry Brady consortium.
We have screwed on the door, Lennox Town, for the director of football, Mr. H. Brady. So there's rumours there. So,
but we'll see. Yeah, it's been I thought he would have been better, more dynamic, but clearly.
Last season, the football, it tailed off markedly once everybody knew he was, it was rumoured he was going, although that was denied by Celtic quite often. There's parallels. But it tailed off markedly. But we were battering teams last year. We were creating about 30 chances a game. I think we scored an average 3 goals a game. This year, we're averaging 2 out of 4 shots. It's just, we are not exciting anymore. It is an absolute chore to watch us. And I'm not getting enjoyment. I know Bobby Williamson, if you want enjoyment, go to the cinema. Last year, it was enjoyable. This year, it's not.
However, we'll see. I'm optimistic.
I look at it and go, 12 games, 2 against them, so we've got 10 games. We just need to screw the nut and do what we need to do.
Me and my mate were talking in the pub before the game on Saturday, and we both said, do you think we'll win the league? And we both said, 13 cup finals, fans behind the team, we should be all right. Fucking 5 o'clock, it's already. Oh, Jesus. The team need to deliver, and they're not delivering.
I am a big fan of passing football and stuff like that. But I'm even of the point of, do you know what? Just have a solid back four and then just hoof the ball into the box.
Thank you, Pep.
It's your new part of Belgium, by any chance?
No, but just genuinely, I'm even of this mindset. Just get Kyogo, Maeda in the team, get them in the box, and play Rangers football off shite.
Second ball.
Have the ball. Make sure you've got the ball in the box enough times, and we will score a goal.
Yeah, but I know where you sit at Celtic Park. I honestly can't believe you're the only guy we have had in seat 405, right? But you. but you've got a great view of the game. Great view of the game, right? So you see all the runs Kyogo makes, and we don't play the ball. Right? If we played that first time ball even 4 times a game, we'll get 2 1-on-1s with the goalkeeper. And that immediately ups your chances of scoring because nobody's catching Kyogo once he's away. Okay, the goal will be VAR checked and you hope he's onside. But we do not play a quick pass over the top. Even when, and I'm not talking about a long ball or a hoof ball, a long pass, it's a totally different thing. Virgil van Dijk would bang a ball 60 yards right to somebody's feet. That's no hoof ball. We don't have any of our back four can play a long pass.
I'm not wanting this style of football. The point I'm making just from an absolute, we need to have the ball in the box more, a principle thing. I would have a team that's more or less along the lines, there's an argument you could put forward for solid back four of Johnson, Carter Vickers, Narovki and Taylor, because he's the best left back we got. These nonsense people talk about putting scales at left back and stuff like that. Then we'll play maybe Iwata and McGregor. I would play Palmer as a number 10. And then I would be just saying, we just need to be getting them. Effectively, just 4-2-4 and just be getting the ball. Because all that's happening is teams are just sitting in with to use the modern terminology, low block, and we're just passing around them.
Yeah,
we've got strikers who can score if they've got the opportunity enough times. We just need to get the ball in the box. So we just need, and it's, route one, shitty football. But there's an argument for what we're doing at the moment is not working.
Don't need to play route one, shitty football if somebody will hit a quick through pass to Kyogo. But instead, Scales will hit it to McGregor, who'll bunt it to Taylor, who'll hit it to Hart, who'll hit it to Ralston, who'll fucking put it out for a shy. It's just not good enough. It's too slow. And then the manager says after the game, we played too slowly. Well, what are you doing about it?
Yeah.
We're going down a negative route here. I feel it in my bones, lads.
But honestly, it is negative just now because the whole, we started on it. So, you know, here's your, I'm going to tell you what I'm going to say, I'm going to tell it, and then I'm going to tell you what I say. You know, the whole club is negative just now.
So we need to arrest that, and you arrest it by the fans feeling, see if we win a game 1-0, but the ball was bouncing around the six-yard box 20 times in the game. Actually, there's lots of games under Ange that we won by a goal, but the ball bounced around the penalty spot and the six-yard box a lot in the game, so people then felt uplifted by it. We need to, and I'm being obviously very basic about long ball, but the principle I'm trying to get across is we just need to try and find ways to have the ball in the box a lot. Because if teams are setting up for this low block and we'll just have lots of bodies in the box, fine, you've got no out ball, we're just going to put it in there. And then you are going to be turned, and instead of facing this horseshoe, you're now turned and facing your own goal, and you're going to be hoofing it anywhere. And we just need to get, we need the ball bouncing around the box, this between the penalty spot and the six-yard box.
You can get behind a back four and whip a low cross across the box. There's a very good chance Kyogo will be there, but there's also a very good chance a defender will deflect it into his own net.
Yep.
We just don't do it. We did last year. We just don't do it now.
I hope Brendan and Jack Lyons are listening to this and taking notes.
They probably should.
Palmer's number 10. Get the ball in the box.
I can probably come in Saturday morning. I can probably do Lennox Town for an hour.
I'll give my team talk. They don't like it up him. They don't like it up. Get it in the pixel.
An analog club in a digital age. Get it hoofed up the park and get fired into them.
Get in about them. Get it in the mixer. Because we know that you're from the Far East and you're really technical players, and we know that you're from Scandinavia and you're physical.
Right. Now is the time to wrap this up.
I'm just chucking in every football pundit's stereotypical.
Yeah, there you go.
Anyway, so we're going to win on Sunday. That's all that matters.
We are. And we're going to win the league.
I still think we'll win the league.
I hope we win the league, but I don't expect it anymore.
He's not a real Celtic fan like us, Harry.
Exactly.
All I can say is out the three of us, there was a padded chair empty in 405 on Saturday. That's all I can say. I assumed he was over with his friends Peter, Michael and Chris, but he turns out he wasn't.
I was doing more important things.
Oh, there's nothing more important than Celtic, Brian. Harry, come on, you know that.
Hang on a minute, is his name Brian? You told me your name was Harry.
Came away.
Anyway, enough of this frivolity. Oh, God. 1 hour 40.
Dermot calls him Harry. Lawrence, what do you think? Dermot's got him in his phone.
Arsehole.
Arsehole.
That annoying guy. Oh, God. That annoying that annoying guy's phoning me again. Hello?
Actually, that might be in one of Lawrence's videos. That's why he duck hooked off the first TV's phone rang.
Next time you're doing it, Lawrence, send me a quick message. I'm stalking Dermot again. I'll then phone him on his mobile.
See if he picks up.
Send him an email, dermot.desmond@hotmail.com.
I reckon... And Harry will be playing at St Andrews this year in that, was it the Dunhill or whatever they call it, you know, the celebs. Harry will be whacking it round with Hugh Grant at King's Barnes.
Right. Yeah. Anyway, enough of that. Cheers.
Well,
thanks. I need to edit out Brendan's home address, Dermot's email and mobile number.
We need to release it like June. It'll be in two parts. It's that fucking long.
Right. Thanks very much.
No See bother. You later.
Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness, so much joy.
Hope you enjoyed that podcast. There will be more along at some indeterminate point in the future. Anyway, enough of me. That was Remy McSween, Lawrence Don again, with me, Harry Brady. And this is me, Harry Brady, saying goodnight and God bless. Good night.
Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love. Bring me sunshine in your smile. Bring me laughter all the while. In this world where we live, there should be more happiness. So much joy you can give to each brand new bright tomorrow. Make me happy through the years. Never bring me any tears. Let your arms be as warm as the sun from up above. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love, sweet love. Bring me fun, bring me sunshine, bring me love.